So coming towards the end, I'll say, I wouldn't call myself a true blue badge tourist guide if I didn't leave you with a few superlatives and fun facts to know and tell. So firstly, superlative building. At 112,000 square meters, the library is the largest public building constructed in the United Kingdom in the 20th century. And at 24 meters, it is also the deepest building in the country, with 14 floors, 9 above and 5 below. But because the basement floors are actually double in height, it's equivalent to a 17-story building. Now, its contents, it also has superlative contents. The library counts, as I mentioned before, 170 million items, of which 14 million are books and 4 million maps, and those are increased every year by 3 million items. They sit at this moment on 625 kilometers of shelves, with another 10 kilometers added each year. They say if you were to look at 5 items a day, inspecting the total collection of the library would take 80,000 years. This is to me the most awesome statistic. The digital library system crawls and stores every .uk website domain annually. So, if you do get here on site, I'll just give you the real practical. So when you get here, if you do visit on site, and the gate here, very much locked, is unlocked. The library is in an enviable position to visitors from Europe because it's just next door to St. Pancras International Train Station, where the Eurostop pulls in. It's also close to King's Cross Railway Station with its celebrated track 9 3/4 from the Harry Potter books. Funny story is that I once had a group of young librarian students to tour, and part of the tour, of course, was a visit to the British Library. And on, they were lovely kids, but very earnest library science study students. And on the way, they said, "Could we make a detour on the way?" And I said, "Well, what would that be?" They said, "Can we please go to visit 9 3/4?" And I thought, "Wow, these are the people who talk about Beowulf and Jane Austen who want to see track 9 3/4." But hey, they were kids when the book was published. That's probably what got them started reading. Catering facilities in the library include a very large King's Library Cafe and restaurant on the first floor, and coffee shops on the ground and upper floors. There's also two superb shops with books and gifts on the first floor, and a free coat room, and lockers in the lower ground floor, and toilets on all 5 floors, all of which are wheelchair accessible. So I've done my guidebook writing bits. Thank you so much for listening, and I will now introduce you to our special guest. Katie, hi, welcome.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for that wonderful tour. Having visited the
Katie.
British Library, it's fun to get to hear about all the ins and outs of it.
Great. Katie's the enviable position of not only having the title of Associate Dean of Libraries for Special Collections and Archives in the Florida State University's library system, but also lives in Florida. Now, I don't mean to be snarky here, I really don't, but okay. Archives, special collections in Florida. Tell us a little bit about that.
I know. And not only do I live in Florida, but I live in probably a place least visited by tourists coming to the state of Florida. And so that's Tallahassee, Florida. You might be able to imagine special collections and archives in international cities such as Miami, and the amazing materials that are down at University of Miami. But here in Tallahassee at Florida State University, our collections developed in the early 20th century, and are actually quite remarkable. We have strengths in the French Revolution and Napoleon, Actually one of the largest collections in the world, and some materials that not even the Bibliothèque Nationale has. We work with them a fair amount. The Carruthers Early English Bibles collection. So while we don't have, say, the first edition of the King James, we have the earliest editions of English language Bibles that predate the King James and the second edition of the King James.
Wow. And what do you do? What is your responsibility, Katie, in this situation?
So as Associate Dean, I'm the lead administrator for our Special Collections and Archives Division. This includes our institutional archives, our rare book collections, our manuscript collections, our digital library center. So I oversee all operations, donor relations, and digitization.
Oh, cool. Now, having heard what you did, or what you know, because you have been to London, you have visited the British Library yourself, but having heard what you did about British Library, what would be the American equivalent? Would it be like the Library of Congress, for example? Could you maybe compare those two?
For sure. So I think the Library of Congress is closest in equivalence to the British Library. There are some differences. But the Library of Congress is home. I think when we get into numbers, games, and statistics, it's always fun to compare. The Library of Congress advertises itself as the largest library in the world with the most extensive collections, which there are a lot, so that may be true. I think one distinction, the Library of Congress was actually established under an act of Congress in 1800, establishing it directly as the research library for Congress, the U.S. Congress, not as a national library per se. This is still a function that the Library of Congress serves, their primary research arm for the United States Congress, as our senators and representatives do their work. It has evolved to include many of the activities of the British Library and functions as a sort of de facto national library in the US, although it doesn't formally have that designation. For instance, our US Copyright Office is situated within the Library of Congress. It has extensive rare book and manuscript and other kinds of collections. It's also a repository for books published in the United States, but not limited to those published in the United States. There are
three. Does it also feel like a kind of happening place, like the British Library does, in terms of, like, you know, do people come to, like, work and research, and does it feel like, you know, there's activity and?
Yeah, you know, I think it's. There are three buildings in the Library of Congress complex, and the Jefferson Building, which is the sort of main tourist center and has the core reading room for researchers who register. It is abuzz with activity, but primarily tourists checking out exhibits. The reading room right now in COVID is not open. But throughout the three buildings, there are 20 reading rooms dedicated to different kinds of materials, language-based. There's an Asian literature section. There's a Braille reading room. And where people don't come just to, say, you were mentioning authors coming just to work and write on books, or students to do homework. The Library of Congress is not open to that kind of work, but they do see hundreds, if not thousands, of visitors each year.
Cool. And can you say anything about, like, conservation, about, like, who's responsible and how it's carried out?
Yeah, you know, I'm always jealous of the conservation lab at the British Library. It's such a magnificent facility with highly specialized staff. And in our own special collections and archives here at Florida State, we don't have conservators on staff. We engage in preservation work. And so many libraries and archives, we're maintaining light, we're keeping security, we're watching humidity and temperature controls, watching handling to help preserve and carry materials forward. And then in conservation, those tend to be more restorative or reparative direct actions. So putting things back together, making sure that they continue to survive through restoration.
So it's preservation, which leads to conservation. So preservation is the first step. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Interesting. Just out of curiosity, could you, like, what's the most important or, say, the most difficult manuscript or document you ever saw, like, being worked on, you know, either yourself or by someone else?
So the example that comes most immediately to mind was on a visit to the Massachusetts Historical Society, which is a small private library and archives in Boston, Massachusetts. And in the conservation lab there, the conservators were working on a collection of papers from Thomas Jefferson. And they were materials that had been sort of newly discovered. But one of the letters that they were working on was in hundreds of tiny fragments and looked like dust in an envelope. And the conservator was very painstakingly and carefully reassembling that letter bit by bit. And they were eventually able to restore the letter and with digitization help create a readable copy of the piece.
Oh, wow. That reminds me of, you know, after the Iranian revolution under Jimmy Carter in the 1970s, they spent years and years and years. They had ransacked the American embassy. And they spent years in the Revolutionary Guard, spent years and years trying to put together all the documents that had been shredded.
Yes. This is sometimes the core work of a conservator, is that reconstruction of desecrated records. Yeah.
One last thing I'm kind of interested about is like a question of security. You know, when people do kind of look at historical documents and manuscripts. I mean, this stuff is like bullion nowadays. I mean, you know, there have been stories that I think you and I were talking about a famous thing with the Carnegie Institute, where someone was ripping out pages. And recently in this country, there was a huge heist at the end of last year in Feltham, outside London, where of books, manuscripts worth £2.5 million. I mean, things like manuscripts, Isaac Newton, Galileo, were stolen. Most of them are now recovered, but I mean, is that a concern? Is there a worry about that now that things are getting more and more valuable?
Mm-hmm. For sure. And it's security is sort of constant and active consideration in the context of preservation, as we just talked about, for the British Library, for special collections and archives around the world. It's our responsibility to steward and be good custodians of the materials in our collections and in perpetuity. And so if you go to do research, say in a rare book collection, you may be asked to provide registration or given instructions on how to handle things or not be able to have your computer in some cases or a bag next to you. And these are protocols to help with security, because a majority of users of archives and special collections are not thieves, but we do encounter them. I would also say in the Carnegie incident, that is a horrific incident that happens not all the time, but more often than we would like, of rare book and archival professionals participating in theft. And this is another thing in our internal staff protocols and our ethics that we actively train and work against, because temptation is there. When I work with our own collections, students often ask, you know, what's the most valuable item in your collection? And when they're thinking of value, they're thinking of monetary value.
Sure.
And we certainly have materials that are worth millions of dollars, but their loss goes beyond money. And so that temptation on an open market, we work quite hard against and try to work with the antiquarian book market and archival sellers to help ensure that when egregious incidents happen, that they're caught and material is returned.
I have a question for Katie.
Thank you so much.